This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Westbrook accelerates and scores! Puts it down!
Then he mean mugged the whole crowd up under the rim. And I know the Lakers fans like that, even if they don't want to admit that.
Covington over Davis. Yes! Oh. Now Westbrook puts the move on Bradley. And hits! Covington, yes, another three. What a debut in a second run with the Rockets for Robert Covington.
Once again, filling in for Payne and Pendergast, you have my guy Cecil Short, six-year NFL vet, former Houston Texan, and I'm Wade Smith, former Houston Texan and 12-year NFL vet. And the Rockets had a hell of a win last night. It was a statement win, in my opinion. They went to L.A. and won 121 to 111. Russell Westbrook went off for 48 points, 8 rebounds, and 5 assists. And Robert Covington chipped in 14 and 8 off the bench, and he also had two huge threes late in the ball game, a corner three against AD, and then a trail three on the right side. Listen, you get a guy that just came off the plane yesterday, lands, and he didn't even get to go probably to Houston. He probably ended up going straight to L.A., but whether he did or not, he's fresh off the plane, fresh off of a new team, comes in there and plays at such a high level. And overall, the small ball lineup that people were kind of doubting, you saw kind of what D'Antoni and the higher-ups over there, Daryl Morey over there with the Rockets, believe would be the best course of action for the Rockets going forward. And you saw that in full force last night against the Lakers. And I was surprised, honestly, that they were able to keep up with the Lakers so well and then pull off at the end.
You got to give props to Morey and D'Antoni. They did what they thought was best for the team. And I think last night it gave everybody else a glimpse of hope that, hey, we still can contend in the West, that the Rockets can still figure out a way to contend. And we can't forget, D'Antoni is an outstanding coach. He is outstanding. Has he gotten past the hump and won the title yet? No, but he does put his teams in the best situation to win. And last night we saw them play against a high-level team in the Lakers. Now, I say that to say this. This is the first time that anybody has seen this lineup.
Yeah.
This type of with Covington and with Tucker and with everybody coming in. So the NBA will figure it out as more film gets out there, as more time comes around. They'll figure some things out. But I think right now they did a great job last night. I wouldn't call it a statement win, but they did look impressive last night.
So you're not a believer in this small ball lineup, the Tuck wagon or the. What were some of the names we had yesterday?
Run
3 and D. You know what I mean? The run and shoot. You're not a believer in this iteration of the Rockets going forward.
I think you hit the nail on the head yesterday. It will help them move up in the standings in the regular season. But when it comes to the playoffs, can they do that 4 games out of 7 games? I'm not a believer in that. Yeah. I don't believe that they can beat the Lakers, the Clippers. I mean, the Clippers got better yesterday with the trades they got.
Yeah.
The Clippers are loaded. I don't know if they can beat Denver. I don't know if they can beat your team, Dallas. I'm not sure they can beat those guys 4 times in a row because it's so much wear and tear on the smaller guy to defend those bigs. It's going to be tough.
Yeah, man, you're talking about wear and tear on the smaller guys. P.J. Tucker was getting thrown around down there. He was battling, and that's what you always going to get out of P.J. Tucker, but I kind of felt bad for him because you could see – The Lakers were making a concerted effort to get the ball down low to their bigs. They had at least 3 7-footers that can put the ball in the basket. And so P.J. Tucker is at a huge disadvantage. But at the same time, listen, the Lakers had a bunch of turnovers because they were just not necessarily running their normal offense. They were like, all right, we got these little guys down here. Let's take advantage of them. They had a bunch of turnovers. There was times where guys was going up and getting blocks. Cephalosha came and got a block or two. And
House
is getting blocks. And Covington's getting blocks. And so when big guys get blocked by 6'6 guys and 6'8 guys, you know they feel some type of way. But I think you make a good point as far as the Rockets in the playoffs. When you get into a 7-game series, teams will start to figure you out. But This is the thing. If the Rockets can play a balanced brand of basketball like they did last night, all of the starters scored in double figures. James Harden had an off game, man. He only scored 14 points, had 7 rebounds, and they still were able to pull out the win. If you get James Harden playing at James Harden level along with the way that Russ Westbrook played, and then you have all those pieces around him, Eric Gordon hitting open shots, you got House hitting open shots. I mean, listen, if those guys do that, then they can I'm starting to become a believer. And it was only after one game because I saw it. When you see it in person, it's easier for you to believe, like, all right, they actually can go on a run. And the problem is with the Rockets is this. In the past, it was live by the three, die by the three. Basically, now it's going to be the same thing because they shot, what, 45% from the three last night, or 48%, something like 45% from the three. You shoot 45% from the three, and as many threes that they're going to take, you're going to beat anybody. Now, if you have a game where you're only shooting 30% or 32%, something like that, can you pull out these same type of ball games? I think that's the question.
That's what gets me nervous, because last night they looked great. Everybody was hitting except for James Harden. James Harden was off, but Russell went off of 48. You had Covington that was hitting. You had House that was hitting. You had Rivers coming off the bench hitting. You had a lot of guys had their hand in the pot. Now, if they're off from three-point line, then what are you going to do? If James Harden, and this is my thing too, if James Harden is on, is he passing the ball as much? Are other guys getting their opportunities as much as last night? Because he wasn't hitting. Did a good job finding the open guy, and other guys stepped up. But if he's on, will the other guys around him be able to touch the ball as much?
You make a really good point there, because James Harden, I'm watching the game, and they were doubling him early in possessions, and he was swinging the ball around. And it seemed like, to me, the ball moved better when Harden was bringing the ball up as opposed to when Westbrook was. Mm. Westbrook would bring it up, he would dribble, and he would take a guy off the dribble and make the play and end up scoring or getting fouled a lot, but there wasn't a lot of ball movement. There wasn't a lot of people touching the ball and getting open threes. But when James Harden had it, hey, they were doubling him early, and he was swinging the ball around. You got open corner threes and things like that. So if James Harden is on, if teams decide, now we're not going to double James, we're going to let him get his buckets, it'll be interesting to see how they're able to handle a situation like that.
I really think that that's the best way to defend James, get the ball out of his hands. I'm going to let everybody else beat me. I'm not going to let James Harden, one of the best scorers to ever touch the floor, beat me. I'm going to double him, let him pass the ball, and then I'm prove to me, Austin Rivers, Covington, Russell Westbrook, he was hot last night, but you know it's nice where he can be really, really cold or really off or have a lot of turnovers. So let the other guys beat me. So it's going to be interesting to see how this pans out moving forward. But last night did give some hope. You said statement game. I say this, it gives hope. So we'll see how it looks moving forward.
I tell you what, Covington played well for the Rockets last night, and he had some thoughts in the post-game interview.
That's what I'm here for, you know, being able to be that, you know, the lineup that we have, you know, I'm able to, you know, add a lot of versatility, you know, add more versatility, you know, guys can do a lot on this team, but, you know, me being a, you know, lead defender that I've been accustomed to being, you know, adding value to this team, and, you know, just shows that, you know, we can do a lot, and we can be very, very, you know, good at it, so, you know, just gotta keep building, and I gotta keep learning the system that way. You know, I can keep, you know, get even better. I was just out there pretty much playing, and, you know, my teammates were talking me through a lot of things. So, you know, it's a couple of plays where they was like, man, if you do that, if you continue to do that, like, man, there's going to be a lot of different things that we ain't got to do. So, but, you know, my teammates just, you know, put me in the right position. You know, like I said, I just did what I was going to do, and I was asking.
Fresh off the plane, man, not knowing what's what, freestyling out there, and he played well.
Impressive.
for the Rockets. And listen, one thing that you don't have to worry about as far as learning offense and things like that is your effort, your athletic ability, your ability to make plays using your physical traits, and he did that last night. And so as the mental game picks up with him learning the system, you could expect him to be an even bigger impact player for the Rockets.
Yeah, I'm excited to see him, man. The debut he had last night was impressive. Like you said, straight off the plane, bag still packed, doesn't have nowhere to live in the hotel probably. But he's able to, and that's what you want in a veteran guy. That's why you trade for a 29-year-old vet that knows his role. And he said in the Mark Berman interview, I don't got to change too much. I just do what I've been doing and then learn the system here and then fall right into play. But his effort showed up last night. His willingness to play defense and really impressed me.
I tell you what, I thought it was a statement win for the Rockets. Cecil, of course, he says, you know, hey, it just gives you hope. Whatever you want to call it, I can ride with either way because it was a big win and was a good win for the Houston Rockets. Filling in once again for Payne and Pendergast, Cecil Shorts here and Wade Smith holding you down for the next few hours. Enjoy your ride into work this morning. We're going to talk a little bit about these Texans now. The Texans have some holes on defense and they need to be addressed. And so the main part of the defense that the Texans need to get shored up is the pass rush and, of course, the cornerback position. Now they got some free agents of their own that they're going to be looking to re-sign, guys like Bradley Roby and DJ Reader, Brandon Dunn, people like that. But looking outside of the building, Cecil, what are some of your targets that you think the Texans should be looking at the cornerback position?
At the cornerback position, and we just talked about this off air, it's tough for me. I'm looking at the class on – is it Spotrick.com?
Yeah, SpotTrack.
SpotTrack.com.
Yeah.
And if you look at the cornerback class for free agents this year, you got Chris Harris, who's 31. Jimmy Smith, who's 32. You got Logan Ryan and Bradley Roby. They're probably the youngest, most established in the class, 29 and 28.
Yeah.
Logan Ryan had a really good year last year, 5 sacks. It's before a corner. That's almost amazing.
Yeah.
5 sacks, 4 forced fumbles, 4 interceptions. Roby, we saw the year he had here last year. Then you got guys like Tlaib, who's 34. You got Brandon Carr, who's a free agent, who's 34. You got guys like Ronald Darby, who didn't have the best year last year. So
he struggled last year.
Eli Apple, who struggled.
Yeah.
Jason Verrett, who struggled to stay healthy. He's very talented, but struggled to stay healthy. So I don't know if there's a guy that I can hang my hat on, because when you think of the Kansas City Chiefs, and they're the standard, to be honest. They're the standard. You got to have young guys that can run. I think this class proves how important it is to sign Bradley Roby back. You need a guy that can run, that's young, that can keep up with the receivers in today's game.
I tell you what, man, it says two things. It says, all right, first of all, you need to re-sign Bradley Roby, but also based off of the way that class is set up and how old it is, that Bradley Roby is one of the top guys in the class,
very
and so
true.
He's going to cost a bunch of money in order to retain his services. And that's unfortunate for the Texans because – They have a bunch of guys they got to take care of. You for sure you got to take care of Tunsil unless they decide to franchise him. But who knows what happens there if he's going to want to play under a situation like that. Is he going to be willing to do that? You got guys that you got to pay. Like, are you going to pay DJ Reader? Are you going to pay Bradley Roby? Bradley Roby is a guy that they need to go ahead and pay, but he's going to cost a pretty penny based off of the guys that you listed out there. Logan Ryan is a good player, but he was not a number one corner out there. He was a guy, he was almost like a Swiss Army knife that they're bringing off the edge, getting sacks and making plays all over the place, but more like a Ty Matthew type as far as the way that he was getting used. But you're not using him in the same way, or you're not going to use him the way that you would use Bradley Roby. And so they're going to have to take care of him.
There's some guys that, when we talked about it off air, that the money – you have, what, 60-plus million in cap space, but it's really tied up, right? Because you got certain guys that you have to pay that you want to keep, whether it's Reader, Tunsil, eventually Watson. So there are some market guys, I think, for a certain value. Maybe Maurice Claiborne, who played decent for the Kansas City Chiefs last year. Same thing with Bashan Breeland. He can be a guy that maybe both of those guys – no, I'm sorry, Claiborne's 30, but Breeland's only 28.
Well, you know, Breeland was one of the guys that I was listening to DeAndre Hopkins the other day talking. He was at the Super Bowl in Miami, and he was saying – he was talking about the matchups in the game and the people that can be exploited. And he said Breeland can play. He was talking – he spoke really highly of Breeland, saying that kind of the weaker link is Ward.
Mm-hmm.
And so, if Breeland would be somebody that I would think is on this pretty close to the same level of what you're going to get out of Bradley Roby. So those two guys, I think, probably would be competing for the same amount of dollars, trying to be the most expensive guy in the class.
Man, Byron Jones is out there. I think he might be one of the top guys from the Dallas Cowboys.
Yeah.
He will definitely be one of the top guys out there. If you can get Byron Jones, I'm not sure Dallas wants to let him go. I'm not sure the situation with him in Dallas, but he's an unrestricted free agent. He probably cost a good penny.
Yeah.
But he's somebody that can play, that can run, and he's been proven over the last 3 or 4 years.
So the thing with Dallas is they have so much money that they have already tied up to guys like Zeke and their entire offensive line, and they're trying to figure out if they're going to pay Dak or not. And so to pay Byron Jones, that might be something that falls to the wayside. So there might be an opportunity there But he's going to be one of the top guys, if not the top guy,
easily
on the market. And so I don't know if the Texans are going to be in play for that. So if I'm the Texans, hey, re-sign Bradley Roby, and that's your free agent addition. By retaining him, that's your addition to the roster. And you can go forward, I think, if you have Bradley Roby, Lonnie Johnson, and Gerrion Connolly as your top three corners, of course, and then you have Vernon Hargraves. You got to figure out what you're going to do with Hargraves, because I believe he has a fifth-year option or something like that, to where you're going to have to pay him like $10 million to keep him. So I don't know what they're going to do. They're going to have to renegotiate that. But thinking about the defensive line and the pass rush for the Texans, who are some of the guys that you're looking at there that the Texans need to try to bring into the fold? Because you got to create a pass rush. You saw that against Kansas City Chiefs, that when they played in the Super Bowl against San Francisco 49ers, when they struggled, it was because the 49ers were getting after the quarterback, getting after Pat Mahomes. The Texans couldn't do that, and Pat Mahomes had a field day. So who are you looking at there?
There's one guy that stands out to me, Dante Fowler. I think he's a young guy. He had 12 sacks last year, 16 quarterback hits. He's an outside linebacker, fits that role of defense that they're in, that mold of defense that they're in, and he's a guy that, honestly, 2 or 3 years ago, I think his rookie year, he had like maybe it was 4 years ago when he had a big game against Tom Savage in the Texans. He had like 3 sacks.
Was that the game when Savage got sacked like 43 times?
Oh, yeah, it was terrible. And,
Didn't they have to put Deshaun in on that game?
They had to put Deshaun in.
Yeah,
that
was
game.
The first game of
and
the
at
year.
Halftime.
They gave up. Jacksonville had like 10 sacks that game, bro. That was
Calais had like 5.
Yeah, he was the defensive player of the
Fowler
week.
Fowler came in.
Was taking turn. Think about how far the Texans offensive line have come from that point. That was two years ago.
That was big.
You had, I believe, Kendall Lamb had to play a bunch that game. Julian Davenport might have gotten hurt, or the right tackle, Shontrell Henderson. He got hurt early in the ball game because Davenport got beat. And then Davenport, they moved him over to right tackle, put Kendall Lamb at left, and then they struggled the entire day. And now you have left to right, you got Tunsil, Sharping, Nick Martin, Zach Fulton. I don't know if he's going to be here next year or not, but you had Zach Fulton this past year, and, of course, Titus Howard. The Texans made some moves to improve the line, but sorry to take you off track
fine.
When I heard that you mentioned that game, I'm like, dang, the Texans have come a long way up front.
I think Fowler is a guy that can instantly be an impact and instantly become a pass rusher alongside. I don't know how much JJ got left in the tank. I think Ross Tucker hit on that. How healthy can he be? How much more does he have? He is. Once you hit that other side of 30, things do get tougher. You don't heal as faster, as we both know. And that's just part of the game. It catches up to you. So I think he's a guy that can come in right away and help this defense.
I tell you what, man. So I'm going to base my person that I'm really looking at off of the fact that I want to retain DJ Reader, because what he brings to the defense in the run game and in the pass game as far as pass rush ability and ability to push the pocket and set up other guys to get sacks, I don't want that to go out the building. And so if you're having to probably franchise DJ Reader, and that's – $14, $15 million, you got to get a guy that can give you some pass rush from the outside, but at the same time, he's not going to take up too much of your salary cap. And one guy I think that the Texans can get for a bargain is Shaq Lawson. Shaq Lawson is a defensive end for the Buffalo Bills, and he had 7 sacks last year, 18 quarterback hits, but he wasn't even a starter, man. He was a rotational guy. He was a pass rush specialist, basically. And so if you could bring a guy like Shaq Lawson into the building, I don't know how much he's going to cost, but the fact that he wasn't a full-time starter, that's going to be held against him. Hopefully you can get him for a pretty good price. And he's got some juice, as they would say over there at NRG, in his pass rush. Shaq Lawson can get after the quarterback.
That would be a good addition. I think you made a good point. You want to – because you could probably get him on a deal. What I mean the deal is not – necessarily going to break the bank, because you just paid Merciless a bunch of money. I'm not sure how much he's getting a year.
Merciless is getting in the teens. I don't remember exactly how many, like 12 or 13, something around there.
So
somebody will text in 713-572-4610. How much is Whitney getting paid a year?
If you can get somebody on a bargain deal that can come in and make an impact like that, that can play his role, the more pass rushers you got, man, the better. And one thing about pass rushers is, if you can rotate them, so a guy comes in, he's a third down special, like you mentioned Shaq was, or a guy that can just strictly rush the pass or come in fresh, and you played tackle before, How difficult is it for a guard or I should say tackle to come in when you're constantly in, because you don't really rotate offensive linemen like that?
Yeah, oh no. If you're rotating offensive linemen, something ain't going right. We're real talking. So anytime that happens, you're like, all right, if they had a guy, he'd be in there every play. But that's something that's difficult that you do have to deal with when you're focusing in on one guy or two guys, and then they bring another guy in fresh. That has a completely different skill set. It forces you mentally to recalibrate. All right, who am I going against now? What can I expect out of him? And so Shaq Lawson is one of those guys that people, when you look at the film going into the game, you're going to look at Shaq Lawson and understand, all right, this is a guy that I got to prepare for. But still, the fact that he comes in fresh all the time, and the fact that he does a good job of getting after the quarterback and getting quarterback hits. That's what you want. And I got some numbers here. Whitney's getting 10.5 a year for the next 2 years, and then it jumps up to 12.75 and 12.25. So I mean that's good money. But we're gonna look at this contract in 2 years and say, all right, if Whitney is still playing at a high level, then you're gonna say this is not a terrible deal, because. Right. The price is going to continue to go up. There's going to be inflation all over the league. And so that's just part of it. It'll be interesting to see what type of deal Shaq Lawson can draw in free agency now. And filling in once again for Payne and Pendergast, got my guy Cecil Shorts here, 6-year NFL vet, former Houston Texan, father of 7, and lover of all things sports. And the voice you hear right now is Wade Smith, 12-year NFL vet and former Houston Texan. I only got 4 kids, man. I don't know if I could handle 7.
Only
man.
4? Four is still a lot, though.
4 is a lot, but when I hear you say 7, I'm like, yeah, man, that's a whole nother level. And 3 of them are babies right now. How old are they? 1?
18 months.
18 months? Like, yeah. That's a lot of diapers to change, and that's a lot of –
Oh, man, that's a lot going on. I'm so tired of changing diapers right now.
Are you?
I can't wait to get out of that stage.
But answer me this, man. You're like a diaper-changing pro right now, right?
Oh, absolutely.
Like, I mean, you could go through 3 diapers. And
absolutely.
If you timed yourself, how long would it take you to get through 3 diapers? Like,
3
4
diapers?
Minutes?
It depends on what happened in that diaper.
That's important.
say a normal number 1 happens, I can get it done with 3. Wipe them clean, put some Vaseline, Aquaphor on their butts, and close them up probably by the minute 30.
Okay. Okay, that's legit now.
Yeah,
they need to have like a Daddy Olympics. Have you seen the movie? Have you seen the movie Mr. Mom?
No, I haven't.
So this is a throwback movie. It's like old for me, because I used to watch it as a kid. It was like in the 80s, but there was a guy that he was like an ad exec or something like that, and he worked, and then all of a sudden he lost his job, and so he had to stay at home, and his wife went back to work, and she was doing really successfully, and so he had to stay home and be Mr. Mom, and his kids was just running them all over the place to start off with. But then as time went on, he started figuring it out, and so at the end of the movie, they have this like Olympics that he ended up getting his job back, but they had like this Olympics at the end, and so I was like, man, they need to have an Olympics just for dads, because there's a lot of good dads out here that change diapers and take their kids to carpool in the morning to school every day. And so they got to do a Daddy Olympics. You know what I mean? I wouldn't mind seeing something like that at all. But NFL offseason, this is when a lot of bold predictions come out. And shoot, in the NFL, if we're going to talk about bold predictions, I want to start here home first. And the prediction that kind of caught me off guard, and I don't know if it lightweight upset me, but it made me feel some type of way, is first thing I see is the bold prediction, because they went through all 32 teams. It was an ESPN article, and they say the Texans will let nose tackle DJ Reader walk despite an excellent season. Now, if you let DJ Reader walk out the door, who's going to replace him? This is the thing with an organization. Anytime you draft somebody in the 5th round and you get that much value out of them, you got to take care of that guy and keep him, because you cannot get in the habit of letting your best talent leave the building that are homegrown. To me, it would remind me of A.J. Bouye leaving, a couple of the offensive linemen that left, the Brandon Brooks and the Ben Jones of the world that are playing at very, very high level in other places right now. Mm-hmm. DJ Reader, if he leaves here, he's going to go somewhere else and have a hell of a career. So let's keep guys like that in-house. But when the first thing I see, this is the bold prediction, hey, they're going to let DJ Reader walk, makes me feel some type of way.
I think they're wrong. I think there's no way they can afford to let DJ Watt. The amount of impact he had on the run game, the pass game, on the defense as a whole, it's just too much to let go. And then to add to your point, when you got a fifth-round guy who earned his stripes, who's a lunch pail crew, they say he just packs up, comes to work every day, does his job, and he outplays his contract and you don't pay him, that says a lot to the other teammates in that locker room. Like, you don't take care of the guys that you draft. You don't take, you're not going to take care of us, so why would I want to stay here where I can go somewhere else that they really want me and they'll take care of me?
That's an excellent point. And when we were having the discussion, I think it was last week, about determining who should you pay, Bradley Roby or DJ Reader. In my mind, figure out a way to pay both. But you got to pay DJ Reader first, or you got to get him locked up first, because he's your guy. He was the one that's been in the locker room, done everything the right way, played above his contract for the past 4 years. You take care of that guy, then other people in the locker room understand, like, oh, this is the blueprint here. If you are, you do things the right way, you're a great teammate, you go out there and perform week in and week out, you'll be taken care of. And so I would feel some type of way just outside looking in if Bradley Roby stays here and DJ Reader leaves, and I'm sure guys in the locker room will feel some type of way. It was like, oh, we let another guy go, because there's guys that have been in the locker room. There's people that have been in the locker room for a long time and seen guys come and go, but it's always worse when it's ones that have been there since the beginning and played in it and did it the right way, and they still can't figure out a way to keep them in house.
And you mentioned it. Who are you going to replace? Like, who's going to take his place? So if you're not going to pay him, that means you're going to pay somebody in free agency, or do you think you can get somebody else to come in? And going back to our division, Jacksonville Jaguars, Leonard Fournette, run the ball heavy. Marlon Mack and the Colts, run the ball heavy. Derrick Henry led the league in rushing last year, run the ball heavy. You need DJ Reader. So I disagree with this bold prediction by ESPN.
Well, here's another bold prediction in the division. It says the Indianapolis Colts will attempt to move up from number 13 pick in the draft to pick Alabama's Tua Tagovailoa. I love Tua as the quarterback position. I would not want to see him week in and week out, or twice a year in the division. So if Ballard is able to move up and get Tua, that tells me you have a situation where the Colts start off with Peyton Manning, and then they go from Peyton Manning to Andrew Luck. They have a year off from Andrew Luck, and then now they're going to backdoor that with Tua. It ain't right, man. It ain't right. I don't want to see Tua nowhere near this division, man. What do you think about this bold prediction for the Indianapolis Colts?
Well, I wouldn't be surprised. I think Chris Ballard is a very good GM, and they have the assets to move up in front of possibly Miami, who may draft him at number 5 if that's the case. But I'm not as worried or as impressed. I think Tua is very talented, but I'm not worried about him being a staple like Andrew Luck was or Peyton Manning was. I think in college he had injuries after injuries after injuries, so I'm not sold on how he can be healthy in the NFL if you weren't even healthy in the SEC. When you got guys coming at you that's bigger, stronger, faster, now he's extremely accurate, no doubt about it. And then in the biggest games, to me, he didn't show up all the time. Whereas you saw Justin Burrow this year, or Joe Burrow,
Joe Burrow.
Justin Herbert, and then Joe Burrow.
Yeah.
Joe Burrow played lights out week in and week out, no matter who they played. So for me, it's still some questions out there about him, but I wouldn't be scared. If they do that, okay, cool. I'm not worried. We got Deshaun Watson. I think we're better. But Tua can be very good. I'm just not worried about him like you may be.
So another team in the division that has a bold prediction for them is that the Titans will sign quarterback Ryan Tannehill and running back Derrick Henry without using their franchise or transition tags. Now, listen, when you tell me that the Titans are going to keep Ryan Tannehill and pay Derrick Henry long-term deals, I'm all in on that. From the perspective of a Houston Texan fan, I want to see those guys there because I know what I'm going to get, and I know when you pay running backs a boatload of money, it usually backfires on you. And then Ryan Tannehill, I'm not a believer. You know what I mean? He did a good job this year. No question about that. No doubt that he had a hell of a season, but I'm not a believer. You saw what happened in the playoffs when they lost against Kansas City. He's not a guy. He's very similar to me to like a Jimmy Garoppolo. He's a guy that will steady the ship, but he's not going to win ball games for you. So if you're telling me those two guys get long-term deals, to me that means that the guys around them are going to have to dissipate. They're going to have to let some guys go to pay both of those guys long-term. So I'm all on them signing both of those guys.
Yeah, if I'm Tennessee, I don't know if I want to sign both of those guys back. I think Derrick Henry, you have to. I think 1,500 yards – But you mentioned, I mean, the leading rusher last year, too. You mentioned, though, for whatever reason, when running backs get paid, they seem to decline a little bit. They seem to go downhill a little bit. And that could just be the wear and tear, especially the way Derrick Henry runs, how they use him. You know, I hope he doesn't decline, but that's the trend that it goes, whether no matter who's getting paid. Going all the way back to, I remember Sean Alexander from Alabama when he got paid in Seattle.
Yeah.
After he got paid, he was never the same. He was the cover of Madden and everything, and he was never the same. Ryan Tannehill, I think he hit the nail on the head. I'm not worried about him at all. He's a game manager at best. And if they're going to pay those guys top dollar, that means you're not going to be able to surround them with more talent. And they need some more pieces. I think they're a good team, but they need some more pieces around on that offensive side and the defense side too. So if you're going to pay them, go ahead. I think they'll be a tough team, but not a team that will the Texans will have to really worry about year in and year out.
I tell you what, here's another one, man. The Bears will acquire an experienced backup quarterback to push Mitchell Trubisky. They say that they might look to get a guy like Andy Dalton to be a number two or Marcus Mariota. It kind of do a similar situation to what happened last year with the Titans bringing in Ryan Tannehill to back up Mariota. And then, all right, shoot, Mariota struggled. Hey, we're going to put in Tannehill. Chicago's looking to do the same thing with Trubisky. If they brought in Andy Dalton, there's no way he's not the starter by week four, because the general manager, Ryan Pace, came out and said that, you know what, going into the season, hey, Mitchell Trubisky's going to be our guy, he's going to be the starter. But to me, Mitchell Trubisky's just not going to ever be the guy that they hope for him to be. I mean, he didn't really have a much of a track record coming out of college. And then now you draft him ahead of Pat Mahomes and ahead of Deshaun Watson. And now you got to recalibrate and figure out how you're going to come make up for it. Andy Dalton, I think he could do really well in that Kansas City Chiefs offense Ryan Nagy, with Nagy out there in Chicago. So I would like to see that for Chicago, because if they just try to stay pat with Trubisky, it's going to be a long year for the boys.
Yeah, they need to upgrade at quarterback. Trubisky is just not it, and I hate to say it because he's a guy from a suburb of my hometown, Mentor, Ohio. I grew up, my brother played against him. He was all state and all conference. I think he won Mr. Ohio in football. He's kind of like a legend back in Mentor, Ohio.
Yeah.
But Andy Dalton or Marcus Mariota, I stay away from Marcus. I think the injuries get to him. But I think Andy Dalton can come here and run this offense very, very well as far as Chicago. I think he has the weapons outside, and Andy and Allen Robinson, who's a Pro Bowl with the Jacksonville a couple years ago, had a good year last year, over 1,000 yards. But that's the piece that they're missing. They need somebody at the quarterback position. Their defense is outstanding.
Yeah.
Their running backs aren't bad. You got David Montgomery, who had a good rookie year last year. You got Tariq Cohen. They need somebody at the helm. And I think Andy can be that guy. And on this team, I think he can be very successful. And sometimes it takes for a quarterback to go to a new situation, kind of like Ryan Tannehill, and he can do well. But Andy has some good years in Cincinnati, so I would love to see him in Chicago.
Hey, man, taking it over to the left coast, over to that Pacific Northwest, the Seattle Seahawks, the prediction is this: they will not re-sign Jadeveon Clowney. It talks about in here, he was the only consistent threat on one of the NFL's worst pass rush units, which made it all too evident that the Seahawks needed more than just him. So they're probably going to be looking to get a couple of guys to spend the money on, as opposed to spending it all on Jadeveon Clowney. What do you think this says about, if anything, about Jadeveon Clowney, that if the Seahawks decide not to re-sign him?
I don't know if I agree with this, but I kind of understand the mindset. If you keep reading the article, it talks about how the Packers used their money to sign two pass rushers, and both of those guys last year combined had 25 and a half sacks.
Yeah, Za'Darius Smith and Preston Smith.
Which were a bit, they had a huge impact on the Packers' success last year. So I can understand it from that standpoint. But Clowney, I don't think it says anything about Clowney per se, but he's a guy that's a game wrecker. We talked about this all offseason. He's a guy that can change the game. He may not put up double-digit sacks, 20, 15, 12 sacks a game, but he hurts the game. I mean, he can hurt the other team in so many ways. I remember early on, was it San Francisco Monday night? It was a game on Monday night, and he took over the game on the defense side of the ball. He was outstanding. And it's like, he is the type of guy you want in your squad, but he's going to cost a lot of money. So I do understand both sides, but I don't think it hurts Jadeveon Clowney's not legacy, but it doesn't hurt his. I'm trying to think. It doesn't hurt him as a player. It doesn't take away from what he does. Take away from what he does. Absolutely.
This last one I got here is the Miami Dolphins will trade up to draft Tua. Now, think about this. If they're trading up to draft him, apparently it's because there's multiple people that are after him. Of course, we talked about earlier that the Colts are looking to move up to get him as well. Whoever they trade up with to get him, if you're a team like the Detroit Lions and you're sitting there at number three and you're like, hey, man, if anybody wants to come holler at me,
yeah,
they can improve very, very fastly, very, very quickly. But Miami Dolphins are sitting at five. You think to yourself, like, man, if they would have lost a couple of more games, they wouldn't have to trade any picks. But because everybody was talking about them tanking, and then all of a sudden, yeah. Hey, Flores is like, nah, we finna win some ball games. And they went out there, and they actually changed the outlook completely of the AFC playoffs, because by them beating the New England Patriots and forcing them not to have a first-round bye, that just tricked off everything, and it set it up perfectly for the Kansas City Chiefs to waltz on into the Super Bowl. But that's a whole nother discussion in itself. But what do you think about the Dolphins having to trade up to get Tua?
That would be interesting. And I think the Lions, and even the Redskins, I think the Redskins have the number two pick. That puts them in position to get a lot of assets. It puts them in position to get a lot more draft picks or even a good player, whatever the case may be, to help your future. Because both of those teams, if I'm the Lions, you need a lot of pieces. And I think I look at a lot of the mock drafts, and a lot of mock drafts have the Lions picking the cornerback from Ohio State. And he'll probably be there at where the Dolphins pick now at five.
Yeah.
So if you can get some assets, okay, we can still get our guy at number five, I think you're in a real good position.
I tell you what, man, it's about that time. Let's do some headlines, Jonesy.
Westbrook accelerates and scores. Puts it down.
Then he mean mugged the whole crowd up under the rim. And I know the Lakers fans like that, even if they don't want to admit that.
Rockets beat the Lakers last night in L.A., 121-111. Russell Westbrook goes off with 48 points, 8 rebounds, 5 assists. Robert Covington, the recently acquired 3-and-D swing guy, came in off the bench and had 14-8. James Harden, he struggled, man. Only had 14.7 assists. But the Rockets still got an impressive win, man. What'd you think about the Rockets going out to L.A. and getting that W?
It was a big win. It gives everybody hope, man. The small ball is what they're all in on. And when you bring a guy like Covington in, and he can perform the way he did. Basically, he performed like that way all year. But when it comes to his debut, to make those clutch shots like that, his effort on the defensive end, and really the effort from the whole Rockets on the defensive side of the ball was impressive yesterday. They did a good job of just being putting a lot of pressure on the ball. Whoever was dribbling the ball, they did a good job of hustling, block shots from Daniel House, P.J. Tucker, Covington.
Cephalosha.
So it was just a good overall team win, and it definitely gives hope.
I tell you what, man, every time that they were making plays and forcing jump balls, I was thinking to myself, damn, they don't have a chance to win this. But you're right. The way they played defensively the entire night,
it's impressive.
They were getting after the Lakers, man, and so that was good to see. They're going to have to play in waves with this small ball lineup that they have going forward. Now, I don't know if it's going to be something that's going to allow them to get to the promised land with what the iteration of players they have now. But it was an impressive win last night. I really liked what I saw out of the Houston Rockets. Jordan Bell, the former Houston Rocket.
Can you say that?
I mean, for probably 24 hours, he was a Houston Rocket, but he was traded to the Memphis Grizzlies. In return, the Rockets got a 6'9 power forward. I'm just going to call him Bruno. We just like we did Nene.
Bruno.
It's Bruno. So Bruno came in. He's a Brazilian player that was traded here to the Rockets from the Memphis Grizzlies. I don't know much about him. I do know that he is a guy that he didn't play much this year. He had a couple injuries, and so he was on the bench. And he had some tendonitis or something like that. So what do you think about the addition of Bruno? And that's the last deal before the trade deadline that the Rockets went on and pulled off.
Well, the question we had yesterday is, will they do another deal? And they did another deal. Now, we don't know how this deal is going to turn out. Looking at his stats right now, in 2018, he averaged about 8 points a game, played about 23 minutes. So he can contribute. He is a longer guy. He's one of the taller guys on the team now. So will he get some minutes as time goes on? That will be yet to be seen. But he is somebody that they made a deal. Now, will this deal put them over the top? Probably not. But the hope that you seen yesterday, and I keep saying hope because the moves that were made from the Clippers yesterday kind of solidified them as the top contender in the West.
Yeah.
And they really got some depth yesterday. So we'll see how this turns out from Mr. Bruno.
Yeah, I don't know exactly what he's going to bring to the team. He's an athletic guy. I heard an interview the other day where he's talking about he's the Brazilian KD.
D'Antoni mentioned he wanted KD somewhere.
Yeah, I was listening.
He wanted to find KD.
I was listening to In the Loop yesterday, and they had some guy from about 5 years ago saying, "Hey, this Bruno kid, he's going to be the next version of KD in about 3-4 years." And now that time has passed, and he's still averaging 2 points and 2 rebounds a game. So he's not quite on KD's level yet. But he's got to be a good athlete if you're going to, you know, compare him to that way and size-wise and all that. But I don't expect too much out of this trade. And if you whatever you get extra out of this, you can ride with it. And based off of what you saw last night out of the Rockets-Lakers game, they're not using the big guys.
I mean, they're not.
Tyson Chandler on the bench the whole game clapping, cheering guys up and keeping them going. But he didn't really see the court. And so – that I mean, this Bruno, he's something that is going to be a 14th, 15th, or the 12th guy on the bench type of a role.
Yeah, but I do think you're missing Tyson Chandler. I do think he'll get some minutes. I think he'll have to get some minutes come playoff time. And he's an older guy, and he understands his role. So maybe Bruno could come along, Tyson, learn from him, and be able to give some quality minutes in the playoffs. Maybe.
Yeah. I tell you what, man, we talked about yesterday about the type of adversity that the Astros are going to have to go through this year. And the different negative the negative comments that they're going to get from all around the major leagues. And most of them we talked about yesterday came from the fans. But the Astros took a shot last night from somebody that was very, very unexpected.
Were you surprised?
I was surprised.
They didn't steal signs back in your day?
They did. They didn't steal them that way.
Do you think the punishment fit the crime?
No, I don't. I think whoever did that should be out of baseball the rest of their life.
Wow. And if you don't know who that voice was, that was Hank Aaron, Hall of Famer Hank Aaron, the guy that at one point held the record for the most home runs in Major League history. And now you're like, dang, you got this guy telling me that we should no longer be able to play the game. And when you get shots like that from legends, that's got to mean something to you. It hits you a little bit harder than hearing it from a fan in an opposing ballpark.
That hurts. Somebody that has been through all he's been through. And I love the fact that he mentioned, oh, yeah, we stole signs too.
But not that way.
But not that way.
The way it started out, man, you thought to yourself, oh, like, oh, Unc, you know, he just talking, telling us about what's going on. Then he hit him with a gut punch at the end, and I'm like, damn, Hank, I didn't know he was going to take it there.
I want to hear more. I want to hear the whole interview. I want to hear what he had to say about that, because to say they should be a lifetime ban from baseball, that's pretty serious. And I understand to a certain point, but I don't agree.
Is this a get off my lawn type of situation where you just got an old head that is not seeing the things the way in kind of the modern age of baseball, or does he have a legitimate point there?
Might be a little bit of both.
Yeah.
It might be a little bit of both. I mean, it's interesting to me too, because Dusty is taking over as the manager, and
that's
teammates.
That's his boy, yeah.
You know, they were boys, so that's an interesting dynamic of why he would come out and say that. But I don't know, man. For me, I don't think they deserve a lifetime ban. I think they should, and this is my opinion. I don't think the player should be punished, because in the other sports, and we talked about it before, it happens all the time, different ways, but it happens all the time. So for what they did, they'll deal with the organization. Maybe should get punished, but I don't know if the individual player should get punished for what they do.
Well, see, the organization did get punished. That's why AJ Hinch is no longer here. That's why Crane had to come off $5 million. That's why Luno is no longer here. The player should have got some type of punishment. I understand why they didn't.
What punishment, though?
I mean, they should have got some type of suspension, not a lifetime ban or anything like that. I think that's way too far. I think Hank Aaron saying that those guys should never play ball again, I'm completely opposed to that line of thinking. But they should have got suspended for X amount of games. You got suspended for PEDs for doing something, you get X amount of games. Now, the problem was how they were going to figure out who did what, when they did it, and how to dole out the punishment. So, and having to deal with the players' union to get that done, that lets you know how strong the NFL. I mean, sure, the Major League Baseball playoff union, the Major League Baseball Players Union is. And so they didn't want to deal with that. But I tell you what, the players should have got some type of punishment. They're going to get the punishment of every day, every night, day in and day out. They're going to go into these ballparks and have to hear things from various fans, but hearing stuff from your heroes and people you looked up to and from legends, I think that's gonna that's a type of punishment in itself. And so we'll see how that's it goes for the rest of the season. But I heard that and I was like, damn, that's pretty interesting. So AJ Hinch, former manager of the Houston Astros, had an interview with Tom Verducci tonight. He has it one tonight on Major League Baseball. It'll air at 5 p.m. But they had a little snippet of the interview last night, and so listen to what AJ had to say.
The Astros won the World Series in 2017. Based on what we know now, what we know from the commissioner's investigation, is that championship tainted?
It's a fair question, and I think everyone's going to have to draw their own conclusion. I hope over time and the demonstration with the talents of this team, the players, the careers that are being had. We have some of the best players in the entire sport all together on the same team. I hope over time it's proven that it wasn't, but I understand the question. It's a fair question, and people are going to have to draw their own conclusions. Unfortunately, we opened that door as a group, and that question I may never be answered. We may never know, and we're going to have to live and move forward and be better, better in the sport. But unfortunately, no one can really answer that question. I can't pinpoint what advantages or what happened or what exactly would have happened otherwise. But we did it to ourselves.
Was that much of an answer to you? I mean, one thing, when I'm listening to it, he sounded very, very contrite. You could tell he was hurt that he kind of put himself in a situation and now he's no longer employed and this cloud is going to be over him for a while. But it was a direct question asked to him and he didn't really give a direct answer. It'll be interesting to see how this interview goes tonight on Major League Baseball Network.
I liked it because he didn't deny anything. He said he basically took ownership of it.
Yeah.
So for me, I think he did answer the question, and I think it was an honest answer. Like, it's up to everybody else, not necessarily up to me. Everybody may think a certain way, come to your own conclusions on how it's looked. But for him, for me, I put it this way. It's not tainted because baseball, hitting a baseball is one of the hardest skills to do in sports.
Yeah.
And I don't care if you know it or not. It's still a hard thing to do. That ball is moving. It's an incredible skill to have. And that's Keuchel said it best, too. There were some times where they were right about the signals, and there were some times where they were completely wrong about the signals. Yeah. They had no idea sometimes. And then players make adjustments as well. So for me, it's not tainted. They earned it.
Well, I look at it like this. I don't think he answered the question because the question directly was asked to him, hey, do you think it was tainted? And he didn't say, no, it's not tainted, or yes, it is tainted, mm-hmm. and this is the reason why. He just basically said, you know what, we opened ourselves up to that question. But who is it for me to say? Well, it is for you to say because he asked you specifically the question, what do you think? But I understand why he took the approach he did. But I would have loved him to be like, you know what? It's not tainted because I know what those guys did day in and day out and put in the work. But I understand why the question is out there and I understand why somebody would feel that it is tainted. But I don't feel it is tainted personally because we had a World Series caliber team and we won the World Series. And so I would have loved to hear that answer. And I'm very interested to see what we're going to get out of AJ Hinch and if we can get some kind of direct answers from him. But just watching the interview and seeing how he was, you could tell he's hurt, man. And it was kind of tough to see because AJ was a great dude, man. He was a good guy and really loved what he did for the organization. Eric Weddle, safety for the L.A. Chargers, retires from the NFL after 13 years. I got to ask you this now. How about to say Clint? I'm going back to the afternoon time. Cecil. Is Eric Weddle a Hall of Famer? I'm gonna throw some stats at you, and you tell me what it is. 201 games, 1,179 tackles, 98 passes broken up, 29 picks, 8 forced fumbles, 7 fumble recoveries, had 38 tackles for loss, 23 quarterback hits, 9.5 sacks, 5 touchdowns, 6-time Pro Bowler, 2-time All Pro. Is Eric Weddle, does he eventually become a Hall of Famer?
No. No, I think he had a great career. I think he's an outstanding player, but everybody cannot get into the Hall of Fame. That's just what it is. I mean, it's the best of the best. Now, Chris Carter told me one time, the Hall of Fame means you cannot tell the story of the game in your era without mentioning your name.
Yeah.
And I look at the era he played in, and to me, his name does not pop up right away. His name does not pop up right now. Great career. But for me, he's not a Hall of Famer.
I think he's a borderline guy. I think he's one of those guys that as time goes on, if you get enough safeties that would come before him in, his chances of making it in the Hall of Fame go up.
So but you say eventually.
I think the way things are kind of shaking out, and I heard Deion Sanders had some audio about it where he's saying there's too many people in the Hall of Fame. In some respects, I kind of agree with that. When I think about the Hall of Fame, I think about, hey, were these guys the best at their position for at least, you know, a 3 or 4 or 5 year period in the NFL? Those guys should be Hall of Famers, the guys that dominated the game for that period of time. And Eric Weddle, he was one of the best safeties in the game for multiple years. So that puts him in that category. But there's guys like Eli Manning that are going to be being considered that the people are basically saying is a shoo-in to be a Hall of Famer. But bro, he was never the best. He was never in the conversation as the best quarterbacks in the league. But the way things work out, I think he's going to get in. And so, to me, that opens the door for a guy like Eric Weddle.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.